You're listening to a podcast from the RSA. You can find out more about RSA events and projects and how to get involved with the fellowship by visiting our website, thersa.org.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Matthew Taylor. I'm Chief Executive of the RSA. I'm delighted to introduce today's special event, examining racial disparities in the criminal justice system and how to respond to them. It is an enormous pleasure to introduce David Lammy, MP. David is chair of the Lammy Review, an independent inquiry into the treatment of and outcomes for black, Asian and minority ethnic individuals in the criminal justice system. He and I therefore share the experience of being chairs of independent inquiries and the highs and lows of that system. Mine will be reporting in a couple of weeks, yours I think in September, David. So it's great to have you here at this point in the process. David, as I'm sure many of you know, is a Labour MP for Tottenham. He served as chair of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Race and Community since 2010. A former Minister of State, he qualified as a barrister in 1995. He was made a Privy Councillor in 2008, and since 2010 has been a very active backbench MP, intervening in a whole range of issues. In his speech this afternoon, David will discuss findings and analysis from his investigation, which includes evidence of levels of potential bias within the system. So we are delighted, David, to have you with us to share insights into your work and to highlight the need for a national political debate on these issues ahead of your report. Without further ado, please join me in welcoming David Lammy.
Well, thank you very much indeed, and it's obviously a pleasure to be back at the RSA, and I say that as a fellow and also as a fan of Matthew Taylor, and I want to applaud his great stewardship of this wonderful organisation. I wanted to come here today principally because clearly these are very busy political times. Indeed, since my review was set up now over 18 months ago, we've had changes of Prime Minister. We've had changes of Secretary of State for Justice. We've had a general election. In fact, we've had a referendum. It just is sort of relentless. And of course, I've been in our public life very visibly over the last few weeks, principally because of what I felt had to be said in relation to the Grenfell disaster, really, in our that all of you will be very aware of. But this is an opportunity for me to return to a subject that I care passionately about as I prepare to deliver my review in the autumn of this year. And so it's with a great measure of hopefulness, really, that I want to speak to you today. As some of you will already know, when the Prime Minister asked me to conduct this review, I accepted with a little hesitation. Why was I being asked by the then Prime Minister, David Cameron, as a Labour backbench MP, to lead a review into disproportionality in our criminal justice system? But in the end, I saw it as a chance to forge a cross-party consensus on an issue that's complex, contested, and divisive. And I saw an opportunity also to hear voices beyond Westminster and Whitehall, from our judges and judiciary, to community groups, to prison officers, to offenders, and from the victims of crime themselves. And I also saw the prospect, frankly, of working to improve outcomes, not just for black, Asian and minority ethnic people, but also for working class people of any colour and people from low income backgrounds. It is not rocket science, or indeed controversial, to suggest that the vast majority of people in Western prisons come from a poor or low socioeconomic background. And so whilst I'm looking at the issue of disproportionality of black, Asian and minority ethnic people in our criminal justice system, many of my recommendations will apply to white, working class community and white workless class communities in our society. So from the start, I've been keen to examine whether the system treats all people fairly. And that's meant understanding if prisoners from particular backgrounds are more likely to get stuck in cycles of reoffending, and obviously what can be done about it. Remember, and this is important to remember, half of all crime is committed by people who have already been through the criminal justice system. Done it once, you've done it again, and guess what? It's costing all of you as taxpayers a staggering £13 billion a year. So if just for that reason alone, it seems to me, this is an important subject to look at forensically. Now, I know this is an emotive subject. It speaks to issues of personal and professional identity. It concerns the treatment of individuals and the legitimacy of important public institutions. And I know that some minds are made up already from those who believe that the system is racist to others who see that there's no problem at all. You committed the crime, you do the time. But having listened carefully to those viewpoints over the last 18 months, I'm hopeful that I can help to affect some of the changes that are needed to address racial disparity where it exists and to restore the system's reputation. There's a framework that I have in mind of how I want to try and achieve this, and that's really what I want to share with you today. I'm obviously not going to reveal my review today. I'm happy to come back, but I want to share the framework and some of what my thinking is. And it's the product of intensive research that I've conducted over the course of my review, not just in the UK, but also internationally, with a range of countries that struggle with over-representation. And in that regard, I've been to Australia. You will know that the Aborigines make up 3% of the Australian population, and in some territories, as much as 70% of the prison population in Australia. You will know the problems that exist in the United States, but similar problems with Indigenous people in Canada and in New Zealand as well. So all over the world, when you look at prison populations, you see a preponderance of ethnic minorities, Indigenous people, Black, Asian people. I'm told in Iceland, it's Greenlanders dominate in their prison system. So this is a theme, and I've wanted to draw the best of international reserves. And in a sense, in going around the system and listening carefully to views of those within the system, who work in the system, and those who are actually offenders and defendants, their families and communities, and of course the victims themselves, the issues and concerns each have raised have been broadly consistent. And this has helped me to identify these three principles. The first is fairness, then trust, and shared responsibility. Now, to deal with fairness through open decision-making. In society, the poorest, the disadvantaged, and those who need support often suffer the most. When people, or when few people care and there's no job or house to lose, a sense of hopelessness and powerlessness prevails. And this can span generation and define entire communities. It breeds disrespect for society, its rules, and distrust in its agencies and institutions. Without any real prospect of improvement in their situation, people's desperation can quickly turn to anger and criminality. Whilst this is a familiar tale across the UK, I've also seen it further afield in Europe and the US as well. For some time, the very fact of discrimination has been challenging to grip. There are those who would argue on some reliable measures that racism is on the wane. Perhaps, you know, it's part of the 20th century, not the 21st. It's become less socially acceptable. And we know this because, for example, the British Social Attitudes Survey has been asking people the same question for over 30 years, and the responses to that has changed. The question is whether people would mind if a close relative married someone from a different ethnic group. In 1983, over half said they would mind, either a little or a lot, if a relative married someone from a West Indian or an Asian background. That figure has since halved today. There are also those who argue that racism hasn't gone away. It's simply gone underground and become implicit or insidious. Consider, for example, the word gang is used as a code word for group when reporting crimes. And I suspect most people know what the image, when they read in the paper that a gang has done something, what that conjures up in their mind. Some observed, for example, when we talk about young people at university, and you can picture that young person at university and what that young person looks like, you tend to talk about young adults. When you think of a young person in a constituency like mine who's not at university, similar age, 19 or 20, they tend to be called youth. What is youth code for, as opposed to the young adult? So we're getting into, aren't we, in this territory, the territory and the academic thinking of unconscious bias. And this is an idea that I sometimes think was designed to terrify Guardian readers. The suggestion is that people with no overt or conscious prejudices may still think and act in discriminatory ways. And this catch-all term of unconscious bias has been a placeholder now for many years, and yet the debate continues to rage in academia about the actual science behind this and the best ways for testing for it. Because if it's unconscious, you don't know it's there. And it's fair to say that, in a sense, that debate has not been settled. My review, though, is not about academic debate. It's about the treatment and outcomes for Black, Asian and minority ethnic offenders. And we still can't seem to agree on the issue and its diagnosis. And the evidence is that whatever people's diagnosis, the prescription doesn't change a great deal. The best way to ensure fair treatment is to bring information and decision-making out into the open. And let me give you three examples from the criminal justice system. The first is the Northamptonshire Police and Stop and Search. This is an area outside of the scope of my review, but an initiative with lessons to learn. I say outside the scope because my review really begins at the point at which the police hand over to the Crown Prosecution Service and then runs right through, of course, to probation, prison, and back into prison, unfortunately, for a high percentage of ethnic minority prisoners. There's been lots of coverage, discussion, papers. Government's done work on Stop and Search, and for that reason, I'm not dedicating my review to Stop and Search, but clearly many of the problems start with that central issue. Now, in Northamptonshire, any search grounds which are not clearly and immediately identifiable as reasonable or which do not meet the force guidance are selected for presentation to a reasonable grounds panel. This is chaired by a police officer and made up of members of the public and one other police officer. If the panel decides that there were not reasonable grounds for the stop, the officer involved is informed of the decision and the reasoning behind it. In the first instance, the officer and supervisor are offered training and reminded of the guidance on stop and search. If the officer is involved in a second case, both the officer and the supervisor receive mandatory one-to-one training. In the third case, the officer and supervisor are suspended from conducting supervising stop and search until a personalised development plan has been completed. So that's an innovation. in a part of the country, I don't think you describe Northamptonshire as having a dominance of ethnic minorities, but clearly ethnic minorities had been feeling, if you like, victimised in relation to Stop and Search, and the innovation is to bring that decision-making into the spotlight for greater scrutiny. Second, the jury system. Every so often, the jury system comes under attack from those who say that it doesn't work or that the public can't cope with detail or contain their own prejudices. But the news from my review is that it's one of the parts of the criminal justice system that is working best. A comprehensive study by Professor Cheryl Thomas indicated that statistically it makes no difference what the ethnicity of the defendant or the jury is. Why is this? Because in the end, 12 people on a jury must justify their opinions to one another. Prejudice doesn't always work in that context, and you must go on the evidence, or you will be outvoted. So openness breeds fairness. Now, look, there are a little bit of caveats to that, because clearly, and I haven't heard large representations about the jury system in a city like London, in a city like Birmingham, in a city like Leicester. But it is the case, because of house prices, changing demography, that ethnic minorities can find themselves in much further afield, much more suburban and even rural circumstances. So how you ensure that those 12 people are delivering that open and fairness that's at the centre of our system is a small area that I will continue to look at. And the third example is from the prison system. The statistical analysis I commissioned for this review found that adjudications, that is, disciplinary measures against prisoners, are disproportionately being brought against Black, Asian and minority ethnic prisoners. Those decisions are taken by individual officers, but when the case is reviewed by a panel, adjudications are less likely to be upheld. So once again, once it's out in the open, it seems to correct the problem. So you've got the theme. If you leave it to one individual making the decision, sometimes behind closed doors, the prison officer, or even perhaps the single judge, it feels like the decision is less fair, less accountable. The minute you broaden it to a panel, when we look at those areas within the criminal justice system, broadly speaking, the outcomes are preferable. Alongside the need for fairness and transparency is the need for trust. And when there's a lack of faith in the system that's supposed to look after you and enforce society's rules, there's also a fundamental lack of trust. Now, over half of ethnic minorities born in this country who took part in a survey agreed with the statement that the criminal justice system discriminates against particular groups or individuals. Half of ethnic minorities saying that they felt that the criminal justice system discriminates. That means that basically that they think the system's unfair and that it's stacked against them. And if you think about those, the arms of justice, the fact that 50% thinks it's like that is a real problem in our society. In the Netherlands, rigorous academic research on procedural justice has found, perhaps unsurprisingly, that people will be more likely to comply with the law when they feel treated in a just and decent way by law enforcers. It also found that prisoners' perceptions of procedural justice influenced their behaviour once released from prison, and those who felt that they had been treated unjustly during imprisonment were more likely to reoffend and be reconvicted. A lack of trust affects the decisions that individuals themselves take when they come into contact with the system. One of the most striking findings in this review so far is that defendants from ethnic minority backgrounds are more likely to plead not guilty across almost every type of offence. It starts with the young ethnic minority refusing to cooperate with the police and offering a no-comment interview in the police station. It's compounded by a lack of trust in the motives and the competence of lawyers provided through legal aid. Legal advice is then refused or ignored by those who think their lawyer is simply part of the system. So defendants who had a realistic possibility of acquittal and who subsequently and quite cheerfully admitted their crimes to me in prison have spurned the chance to be diverted or for their sentence to be reduced by up to a third with an early guilty plea. The result is wasted resources in the criminal justice system, more agony for victims as the case drags on, and many more years in prison for ethnic minority men and women than should have been the case. Trust then matters. If the system fundamentally asks you at the beginning of the process, are you guilty or not guilty? And you say you're not guilty because you elect to go to a jury because you don't believe the individual judge or magistrate is fair, and you spend longer in prison as a result, there is a problem when it comes down to trust. And trust matters in other ways too. Society as a whole must have respect for the law. It can't be seen to govern the actions of only the few. And this requires the key institutions in the justice system to command not just legal power, but also public legitimacy. And one of the surest ways to achieve this is also one of the dullest sounding. As well as a lack of transparency, there is a significant paucity in the data available at various stages of the criminal justice system, from point of arrest through to release from custody and back into the community. Data has a huge impact on an individual's ability to trust. And simply put, how best can we address weighty issues such as potential racial disparity if we don't know what its nature and scale is? But let us look at what we do know. According to the most recent census, just 3% of people in England and Wales are black, and yet 12% of our prison population is black. Going further, 25% of our prison population and over 40% of our youth prison population come from ethnic minority backgrounds. That compares with just 14% of the overall population. That means that if we don't do something about this, we are likely to see that 12% of the prison population is currently back rise if you consider that the youth percentage is currently standing at 40%. So whilst we've reduced, broadly speaking, young people going to prison, we have seen nothing like that reduction in the amount of young black, Asian and minority ethnic children going into our prison system. And I don't believe all the causes of this lie in the criminal justice system, or that all the answers do either. Let me just be clear about that. But the deficit of trust set alongside that imbalance must be taken very seriously. It's also the case that offenders from minority backgrounds are more likely to face prison sentences than white offenders for the same crimes. I want to repeat that. Offenders from minority backgrounds are more likely to face a prison sentence than white offenders for the same crime. In a recent analysis of indictable offences in the Crown Court, those self-reporting as Asian or black were associated with a 50 to 55% increase in the odds of imprisonment compared to those self-reporting as white. And then turning to the third principle, that is sort of shared responsibilities and the role of communities. Our criminal justice system is conceived as a series of processes with little sense or understanding of how well they work together or how they work for the communities that they're supposed to serve. A pronounced example of this can be found in our youth courts. Magistrates themselves are not empowered to problem solve, nor can they hold to account the raft of frontline professionals that surround a young person who comes before them having done something wrong. When schools exclude them, when there are no role models or mentors to then guide them, when work or training opportunities or constructive pursuits aren't available, children get into trouble. The definition of community is widening all the time as local courts are closed and boundaries are stretched further. So they're a long way from knowing or even owning the problems that their children face. Parents are not engaged. Parenting orders exist by law, but are seldom used, let alone prosecuted. Between 2015 and 16, only 250 parents were issued with parenting orders by the court. Yet there were nearly 80,000 proven offences by children in the same period. Referral orders have short-term impacts on children and don't treat the root cause of offending. So before long, they're brought before a magistrate again, this time for a more serious offence, and now with a history of criminal behaviour building on the CV. The teachers, doctors, policemen and women and community members who should already have been featuring in that young person's lives needs to be more actively involved when a child gets into trouble. So what's the picture I'm painting here? It's of a system where we have a magistrate, because that magistrate, if you like, represents the community. But as you know, round that young person are a range of professionals, health workers, social workers, police, not really held to account or brought to bear in the youth justice system. So if we don't encourage communities to represent the people who live in them, they can't foster social integration, trust, or a sense of belonging. Nor can they adopt the moral and spiritual values that they need to embody and impart this to our young people. I saw in New Zealand their rangatahi courts offer much to inspire here. They've been designed to embrace not only the traditions of indigenous Maoris, but also their culture and approach towards raising children. Elders and members of the community take an active part in hearings and in determining appropriate sentences for the children who break the law. The responsibility and accountability if things go wrong is shared with the community to which the child belongs and to which he or she will return. If members are also involved in guiding and mentoring the child as well, not just while the sentence is served, but also to support them in staying on the straight and narrow once it's been spent, this is something I believe we could learn from. To cut to a local example, Highbury Magistrates Court is a long, long way from the Broadwater Farm estate in my constituency. Why is it that we're not doing the justice on the Broadwater Farm estate? Why is it that those in the community, many who've been subject to the crimes themselves, are not part of the process of holding those young people, particularly where there's criminality for the first occasion? And I guess as part of that, it's also understanding that whilst the system has been good broadly at keeping young people out of prison, it's been less good at keeping ethnic minority young people out of prison. And more importantly, the consequences for society when an ethnic minority young person gets a criminal record are huge, because in our system, that record follows you for a significant length of time. It means less employment, less prospects, and it means more of you paying for that pattern of recidivism. So nothing, of course, justifies criminal behaviour, and mostly people end up in prison when they make bad choices. But we also have to grasp what it is that leads them to do so. In 2001, the Cantor report warned of white and black communities living parallel lives. Today, the same is true. But the polarisation is not just between black and white. It's between those who have a stake in society and those who do not. Those who can see a future through education and training and those who cannot. Those who can imagine doing an honest job that affords them respect and decent pay and those who cannot. Those who have a safe home to live in and those who do not. Those who are lucky and those who are not. Those who live in environments that are over-policed and those that aren't. And the way I describe that is you imagine a child today at Warwick University. Think of that child in your mind's eye. And think of that child doing something criminal. Let's take a criminal act that may, I don't want Universities UK to ring me up and tell me off, but may be going on in one of our university campuses. We've got one just down the road, King's, as we speak. Someone somewhere on that campus is smoking a joint. The police are nowhere in sight on that university campus, are they? It may even be that the odd lecturer has one with the student. God forbid. If that student is walking down Brixton High Road, what's going to happen to that student? That black youth is walking down Brixton High Road, he's going to get stopped. And he's going to get a criminal record. So there is the lack of equity in the system for the similar young peoples, but treated differently in different environments. So we've got to open the system up. It's got to be more accountable. We need broader decision making. We need to imbue trust in the system and understand where communities are coming from. And we absolutely need to ensure that we bring the community back into the justice system as it was first conceived. I'll end there. Thank you very much.
David, thank you very much for that. A very fascinating, very rich speech. And I think it's great that you've framed your approach around kind of principles, underlying principles. I'm kind of interested in terms of where you hope your report will land. And I know you'll say, well, all of these, but I'm interested in where you most want to make the impact. So it could land in terms of different public policy. It could land in terms of different professional practice. And it could land in terms of shifting the public discourse. And I'm kind of interested as to which of these do you think, as I say, you're bound to say all of them, but in the work review I've done, I kind of decided early on I needed to try to get a conversation about good work going, or else the danger was it was all just lots of bitty recommendations. I'm interested in what the target is for your work.
Well, that's a very good sum. I'm afraid it is all of them. Of course, in doing a review and coming to a set of recommendations, I want to shift some public policy. And I want a discussion. I don't think we've had a discussion around the consequences of the criminal record for the black, Asian, or minority ethnic young person. And I do think Britain has to have that conversation, as other jurisdictions are. In New Zealand, they have a very active conversation and public policy that comes from doing everything the system can to stop. I mean, you can't do it, obviously, where you've got very serious crimes, but to attempt to avoid giving the young Maori a criminal record, because they understand that life chances are catastrophic if that comes about. And they go to great lengths, bringing in the community, putting public policy on their statute books and presumptions around that Maori to try and avoid giving that young Maori a criminal record. We have got nothing like that level of conversation at the moment. But it's also to understand that there are some, you know, big public policy problems. The country is rightly concerned and worried when young people are knifing each other and has to act to deal with that reality and that problem. But then we get into how the country is best able to deal with that. I'm really worried also that we have a rising within the basket of the family of black, Asian and minority ethnic. I'm really worried that we have a rising Muslim population in our prisons, and that there's a real sense of alienation, I sense, within that community. And it seems...
If I can just follow up there, because I was going to ask you that question, actually, but so as you've raised it yourself, do you think the issues around the Muslim community and religious extremism and the fear of terrorism and action on terrorism, is that something which you can address in your review, or is it, in a sense, something which is so distinctive, as it were, from more conventional forms of crime and the discourse that's been going on for decades?
I'm not specifically looking at the issue of terrorism-related offences. However, when I say that we, in essence, the system of magistrates and community, I think, is sound and a good system, but we have a problem if magistrates are a hell of a long way from that Muslim young person in Tower Hamlets or Bradford, we have to get community in. I don't think I've got to describe to this audience how catastrophic it is if trust levels are falling through the floor in relation to the criminal justice system within that community. So, and this is not just the urgency of we need Muslim magistrates, and we do need Muslim magistrates. By the way, we need white working class magistrates, and I'm serious about that. But it is also to say that we have to look at more mechanisms for bringing the community in, problem-solving sorts, more panels. And there are, you know, the system for efficiency reasons is moving away from those models. My view is that the system should be running towards those models of practice. If you want to close the trust deficit, you've got to bring justice closer to communities. And actually, you could, if you set up a court in a community centre, it's actually not that expensive. It doesn't have to be every day of the week. So it can be efficient, but my view is that that should be the direction of travel.
And that's very interesting to us, because the work we're doing at the RSA around prison reform, there's a very strong devolutionary element to it, about kind of prisons seeing themselves as community resources that connect to the community, mobilise the community, connect to the rest of the criminal justice system. Our system in criminal justice, as in everything else, is very centralised. Do you think that devolution to cities and also devolution within cities to neighbourhoods is a critical part of this story?
Yes, I do. So I would say that Sadiq Khan here in London and Andy Burnham in Manchester should have way more proximity to the criminal justice system. At the moment, the Mayor of London obviously has a lot of proximity to the police. And when he's thinking about knife crime, he's thinking about the police. He's not thinking about the Magistrates' Court or the Crown Court. He's not thinking about the prison and the recidivists. He's not thinking about the probation system. He's got no relationship with them. Look, he published a strategy last week. He's largely looking at enforcement, and he's encouraging others to do what they can. But actually, I would say that he needs the whole system really to affect change. And this is the bit where communities own the crime. And let's be honest, you think of that young black youth that's been carrying a knife in Tottenham. You put him in front of a few of our religious elders in Broadwater Farm Estate. Actually, that's quite steep. This is not necessarily a soft option. So how can we better make the system responsive and closer to that? And I think there's another point. It's a tipping point. Who is the justice system for? So we know from the American example, let's take the town of Ferguson. There's a tipping point where you put so much of the community in prison or comes through the prison system that you've got to start asking, how is the justice system working for this community if the community are just being put into the prison system? I'll never forget going to a state penitentiary prison in Mississippi. And there was something weird about this prison, and it wasn't just the fact that they had the electric chair. Mm. which they really wanted me to sit in. And I couldn't work out what it was. And then during the course of the trip, about 45 minutes, I realised. I said, why are all the prison guards black women in this male, huge state penitentiary prison? Huge prison in Mississippi. And they said to me, well, because there are no white men who want to do this low-paid job, and that there are, and all the black men have criminal records, so they can't do this job. A tipping point has been crossed where actually you've got to ask, is the justice system really working?
Finally, before I open up to the room, it's in the nature of debate and our beloved media that people are always kind of looking for a kind of fulcrum, and then they force you to be on one side or the other. So in my case, it's I'm on the side of the workers or on the side of the bosses. In your case, it's, in the end, are you going to say it's all about racism or are you going to say it's not all about racism? And, you know, this is the debate. I mean, in America, you'll know the kind of whole debate around the book, the new Jim Crow, and their responses to that. People say, well, that, you know, it's all about race. And then someone comes along and says, well, actually, no, it's much more correlated, you know, incarceration with poverty. That's the issue. I mean, your speech was, you know, very subtle on this. But in the end, that's, tell me about how you have to deal with that issue of people wanting you to kind of fall down on one side or the other of that kind of, and simplifying it to that. How do you avoid that?
I think that the test of our criminal justice system is not the conversation I'm having with the Lord Chief Justice. It's the conversation that the Lord Chief Justice might have if he went to Brixton Town Hall or Bradford Town Hall. And that comes back to trust. How would the community respond to him and his notion of justice? What would they suggest? What would they allege? And in that sense, I see myself. I'm part of the system. I'm a privy councillor and a member of parliament. Clearly, I'm part of the establishment, but I am a representative of a community in Tottenham, but broader than that, that sadly is disproportionately in the criminal justice system. I actually think what worries me more, in a way, is the indifference to race outcomes than pure racism. I could not say hand on heart that I have not been to prisons, and I neither would the Chief Inspector of Prisons, and I see a former Chief Inspector of Prisons in the audience, and he's nodding as we speak. I could not say hand on heart that there aren't prisons where I'm fairly clear that active racism is happening. However, I don't recognise a situation that somehow says that the criminal justice system is per se racist. I don't recognise that. So I think it is more complex, and part of my job is to get into that complexity, to look at the outcomes, to call it as it is, and to force the system to be a bit less indifferent to these disparities. And I've wanted my review to be evidence-led. So it's not just me asserting, it's the facts speak for themselves. In my interim report, when I presented the facts about the prison rate for the same convictions, people looked up because the evidence were there. Why were black women 100% more likely to get a prison sentence than a white woman on a drug offence? Actually, that was the most startling statistic of all. What's going on? And it's once you present the evidence and the facts, then it challenges the system to actually get into it.
What I take from that is it's not so much what you think, it's whether you care that's the starting point. And that's
Certainly.
Brilliant, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to take kind of three people at a time. Try and keep it brief so we can go around two or three times.
Hi, my name is Tabitha, and I've noticed that the criminal justice system seems to be harsher towards women, so it's really interesting to hear your last point there. And I wonder whether your review looked at the way that minority women are treated compared to minority men and whether that differs.
Thank you. Yeah, Sam here from Making Every Adult Matter, Clink's Homeless Lincoln Mind. I was really interested in what you said about trust and the lack of trust there is in communities around the criminal justice system. Do you think correcting that is just about an issue of correcting the outcomes, so making sure that the outcomes are better for people who are facing those kind of challenges, or is it also about making sure that there is a perception that those outcomes are improving, that people recognise that there is going to be a fair treatment at the end of the system?
My name's Ubeda Haque. I'm from the Runnymede Trust. We've been in prisons for the last 3 years working with black and Muslim men around the issues of disproportionality. And at the same time, the Runnymede Trust has been working with over 1,000 black and ethnic minority teachers. Now, the reason I've mentioned those two groups is my experience with both those cohorts, and we've interviewed hundreds of prisoners. We've surveyed hundreds of prisoners, and as I've said, we've surveyed over 1,000 BME teachers, and it's resoundingly clear that disproportionality doesn't just exist within the criminal justice system. It starts way, way before. It starts the moment a black child, for instance, enters school.
Yep,
so what I would want to see in this review, what the Runnymede Trust would want to see, certainly in this review, and we're a race equality think tank, is an acknowledgement of that, an acknowledgement that disproportionality starts then, and then it's constantly reinforced, and particularly for black men. There's absolutely no getting away for black men and for black Muslim men. Sorry.
David, do you want to respond to those points?
I'm going to respond to those points. I'm going to work backwards. Yes, you'll get that. I mean, I've been very clear. I've been asked to look at disproportionality in the criminal justice system. Some may say the framing is too narrow. I don't think it is. We've had no real deep look at our courts, particularly the probation service, the Crown Prosecution Service in this area for a very, very long time. The emphasis has largely been on the police. We haven't really had the thorough look at the rest of the criminal justice system. A lot of work in prisons. There is a lot of work in prisons, but I'm looking at the end-to-end of the criminal justice system. Now, you say the problems start in other places. Of course they do. Of course they do. And of course I will say that. But can I look deep dive at those things without writing the Bible? Of course I can't. And so I think I'm looking at the criminal justice system. I have to look at the criminal justice system. But of course, the criminal justice system is a product of wider society, and some of these issues exist in wider society. But I think the criminal justice has particular outcomes in relation to the cohort that we're speaking about. And for that reason, I think it's legitimate. I suppose that links to the second question, which was perception as well as outcome. I think this goes back to trust. What I found is that when ethnic minorities arrive in Britain, they have a higher trust in the criminal justice system than white communities. Why? Because they've come from countries where the criminal justice system is nowhere near as fair or perceived to be as fair as our system. The problem is that the longer they stay, the less trust they have, and that their children don't have the trust that their parents have. So I think issues of perception are based on reality and exposure to the criminal justice system, and it's really important that we deal with it. And you heard me give the example of Muslim communities particularly, where I think things are feeling to be at acute levels. Can I also just say at this point that my definition of diversity in this sense is broad? Let me just pick out one community that I think has had the years and years, in fact centuries, of the worst disproportionality in our criminal justice system, and that is gypsies and travellers. So let us have a broad understanding of how the criminal justice affects minorities. It is not a narrow, I'm not just looking at black youth. Wherever possible, it's a broad definition of that. And of course, women, really, really important. There's Jean Corston begun fantastic work, obviously, on women broadly in the criminal justice system. I have tried in my review to look closely at the situation for black and minority ethnic women. I think there's more work to do, And those who are concerned about gender need to be prepared to drill down within gender and understand that there are particular outcomes for black and minority ethnic women. Let me give you an example of this. The stigma faced for a Muslim woman who goes to prison is the toughest and harshest I've seen. The ability for that woman to leave prison and to go back to her community is next to zero. There are very few other parts of the criminal communities that experience that level of stigma. That is specific to a particular cohort within the criminal justice system. That would not be true, say, if you were looking at traveller and gypsy men. So there are particular outcomes for women and for black and minority. I've attempted to make sure that they're in the review, but much more work and much more articulacy on behalf of that community is needed.
Sally Taylor from the Kirsta Trust. This is obviously an absolutely vital review, David, and you started off by talking about the reoffending rate. Are you going to be looking in quite a lot of detail in terms of what happens to people from these particular communities in prison that affects their reoffending rate, and in particular about the education that they may or may not be receiving in prison, which could maybe reduce that?
Blossom Jackson, Life Fellow of this institution, I was very interested to know about this review that David is doing at the moment. My question is whether or not you would be able to tell us the cohort of the actual offenders that are in this report, since the emphasis so far has been on the institution and how they've delivered the service.
Sandra Kerr from Business in the Community. I wanted to know if you were going to look at the diversity of the workforce, so the courts, the magistrates, you know, the whole administration of the system, because I think there's got to be something in there about better representation of those from the beginning, really, throughout that system.
If you can answer those questions in 2 minutes, David, we can have one last round.
Diversity of the workforce, absolutely. Now, it's not per se that you fix the diversity of the workforce problem and you fix the problem. Other jurisdictions tells us that that is not the case. But it is just to say that in terms of legitimacy, there are real issues if only 6% of our judges come from an ethnic minority background. And if we look up to the Supreme Court, we look up to the Court of Appeal, and there is nobody there. I believe that it's not just your judicial ability, that the empathy question is an important question for communities. So of course, prison governors, again, this ought to be, this is an area behind even the police in terms of the numbers and the seniority. Why are we not seeing ethnic minorities running our prisons? You know, I'm beginning to think maybe I should try and apply and run a prison. If there was a scheme, you know, a directory entry sideways scheme, I might be able to apply. There isn't, so I can't do that. So I don't want headlines. David Lammy wants to go and run a prison, but you know, I'm illustrating the point. Yes, I'm looking at the. Of course, the institutions matter. We've tried to dig deep into the offences and why people are in prisons. That therefore, in some areas there's no data. There's not very much data at magistrates' level, actually. Which I will say. There's obviously more data at Crown Court level, but there are problems. You know, a record of the judge's remarks are not routinely kept in ever. So there are data issues. I only touched on that briefly, that mean that I will refer to them, but there are gaps. There are gaps for me. And the reoffending, of course, look, what happens is if you're sanctioned, you don't get out to the education. There are issues about the quality of education. You don't get access to the best employment within prison because you're in solitary. You don't get moved down to a Cat C, Cat D prison. Of course you're going to end up coming back. It's why we're seeing 65% of black offenders returning to prison time and time again. So there's a real pattern there, and I'll have a lot to say about that. But also, might I just say, about our rehabilitation of offenders regime, because you leave prison, and what a lot of people don't fully understand is your record follows you. And we have one of the toughest systems in the world. Never expunge, no record sealed, it follows you for a lot. And there are types of jobs that you may be, where you wonder, is this really relevant? Is what I did when I was 18 or 19 really relevant? Now I'm 35. When we know that most prisoners grow up, most prisoners get into their 30s and they actually go straight because actually I want a mortgage. That's hard to get in this economy, but
I can't run so fast.
I want a house. I can't run so fast. I want some kids. You know, it settles down, but yet that criminal record follows them.
So, David, you failed, I'm afraid, the two-minute test, but you haven't failed any other tests. I'm very sorry not to be able to take more questions. I can't help saying that in response to some Ronnie Mead question, someone said to me the other day that every review of disadvantage is told that the answer lies in the education system, except reviews of educational disadvantage that says the answer lies outside the education system. Anyway, it's been a fantastic speech for us to listen to and a fantastic conversation. You said you might come back. I'm sure you'll have other people bidding for you, but if you wanted to launch your report here, we'd be delighted to do so or participate in any way we can. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you all for coming. Sorry I couldn't take so many questions. Please join me in thanking David Lammy.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, why not download our free app to access video and audio files on the go? Just visit our website, therSA.org, and follow the links to the RSA Vision mobile app.